This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome on into another edition of White Sox Weekly, Saturday, February 8th. And we are oh so close. Can you feel it? Pitchers and catchers report on February 12th for the Chicago White Sox. Next week when we're doing this show at this time, pitchers and catchers will already be throwing baseballs in Arizona for the Chicago White Sox. And then shortly thereafter, on February 17th, is when the full roster will be there. Of course, I anticipate, like most baseball teams, that a large majority of players will be filing in to Arizona for spring training well before that, because that's generally what good baseball players do. So we will be seeing a lot of Chicago White Sox players rolling into camp very shortly here, and that is a great, fabulous time of year. Again, welcome on into White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller, talking White Sox for you for the next hour here, getting you set for the 2025 season, if you will. Earlier this week, Pecota dropped. What do I mean when I say Pecota? Listen, if you're a baseball nerd, by this point, you've been locked in to the Pecota system for well over probably 20 years now, the baseball prospectus projection system. And I always like to give, though, for those of you who are maybe a little bit younger and you've heard the name loosely thrown about Pecota, as if you're supposed to just know exactly what it means. Well, Pecota is actually named for a player, Bill Pecota, who played primarily in the 90s for mostly, I think, spent the majority of his career with the Kansas City Royals. But Pecota actually stands for Player Empirical Comparison and Optimization Test Algorithm. Obviously, I think the folks over at Baseball Prospectus just said, all right, we like Bill Pecota. Let's find a way to create an anagram with his name that will basically cite our projection system. I think they were getting cute over there at Baseball Prospectus. Nevertheless, though, each and every year, whenever the first Pecota standings drop, it is always an exciting day around baseball, because it gives us something to take a look at before players are actually out there on the field. And sure enough, the Pecota standings dropped earlier this week. So we'll take a quick peek at what's going on around baseball according to the Pecota standings. Of course, this means nothing ultimately, but it is, I think it's a good snapshot of every team's roster around baseball, what you can kind of expect from at least the smart people around baseball, what they look at, what they see from their rosters, and what you should be expecting. And we'll hone in here, starting out with the Chicago White Sox. And of course, this is not going to be overly flattering in one regard, because the White Sox are only projected to win 61 games, which has them losing 101 games, according to Pecota. But I think if you look at it in the context of where the White Sox were at last year, that is actually an unbelievable jump in terms of wins. When you consider the White Sox, it was just an abhorrent season last year. All White Sox fans can agree. So to see them projected at 61 in Pecota standings is slightly encouraging, at least for me. And I'll also add, they don't even have the worst record projected. That goes to the Colorado Rockies, who are projected to be 54-108. So there's some encouragement there. And a lot of the Pecota standings don't even factor in what we've been talking about a lot the last couple of weeks, and that, of course, is the White Sox farm system, which has now routinely been ranked amongst the top three farm systems in baseball by multiple outlets. And we've covered that not just last week on White Sox Weekly, the week before that when Connor was still hosting. So that is encouraging news to see the White Sox have a huge jump in the Pecota standings based on what they did last season. Around baseball, this should come as no surprise, but the Los Angeles Dodgers are projected to win 104 games. That is absolutely staggering for a projection system to have a team set to win over 100 games, much less 104. We'll see where it actually goes, but I think anybody who's been following the Dodgers and what they've been doing this offseason probably aren't surprised by that. Generally, I will say projection systems tend to be somewhat conservative, so a projection of 104 is absolutely mind-boggling. I'll roll through the rest of the National League here to give you a taste. The Atlanta Braves are slated to win the NL East with 92 wins. You've got the Mets at 91. They just added Pete Alonso back to the mix after signing him earlier this week. The Philadelphia Phillies also slated to win 88 games, according to Pecota. The Washington Nationals at 74, and the Miami Marlins set for 62. In the NL Central, they have the Cubs winning 91 games. The Milwaukee Brewers set to win only 80, somewhat surprisingly there. The Cardinals, 79 projected wins. The Pittsburgh Pirates and Paul Skeens set for 75. Love Paul Skeens. Can't wait to see what he does in his second season in Major League Baseball. The Cincinnati Reds, this one is actually very shocking. They're slated to win only 74 games, according to Pecota. And I actually like their roster, so I'll be curious to see if the Reds can outperform that projection. I expect they will. The Dodgers, as I mentioned, 104. The D-backs set for 87. The San Diego Padres, 83. San Francisco Giants, 78. And as I mentioned earlier, the Rockies slated for 54, according to Pecota. In the American League, in the AL Central, they have the Twins set for 86 wins. The Kansas City Royals slated for 82. The Cleveland Guardians projected to win 81 games. That'd be an 81-81 record, according to Pecota. The Detroit Tigers, who had a really nice, they came on down the stretch last year, made that playoff spot. They're slated for only 79 wins, and that is a little bit curious to me, especially when you consider they added Jack Flaherty, who that signing is baked into their projection. So that's actually a little surprising to me. They don't have the Tigers projected for a little bit more. And as I mentioned, the White Sox projected for 61. In the American League East, this is a little bit surprising. Maybe I shouldn't be that surprised, but even with the loss of Juan Soto, I would have thought the New York Yankees would have been projected to win the AL East. But no, that is not the case. They still have the Baltimore Orioles winning 89 games. The Yankees actually slated for 88.8. So if you round up, they're actually both projected for 89. The Blue Jays, 84.8 wins. The Tampa Bay Rays, 82 wins. And the Boston Red Sox, only 78 wins. Maybe that's why the Boston fans are so upset these days. In the American League West, Pecota has the Texas Rangers winning 89 games. The Houston Astros, who have lost some significant pieces this offseason, they have them scheduled for 87 wins. The Seattle Mariners at 86. The LA Angels at 76. And then finally, get used to hearing this, the Sacramento Athletics. They are projected for 70 wins, according to Pecota. So there you go. The Pecota standings, always a big day in baseball Nerdville when those drop, and they did indeed drop earlier this week. Celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball. Unlock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. All right, I did want to bring this to your attention because we have spent so much time the last couple weeks talking about the White Sox farm system. I saw that Paul Janisch joined Chuck Garfine earlier this week on the White Sox podcast. I listened to the episode. It was very good. If you want to check it out, again, the whole episode is worth your time. But a couple of things that stood out to me that Paul Janisch addressed, White Sox farm director Paul Janisch. Chuck Garfine asked Paul Janisch about the overall health of the farm system in the White Sox organization right now.
The pool's getting deeper, right? Like we have a lot of players that we're excited about. There's some obvious top end talent with, you know, Noah and Hagen getting ranked number one and two in minor league baseball relative to left-handed pitchers. We've got a couple of young catchers that are both going to play in the big leagues that we're excited about. And honestly, there's a couple more catchers in the organization that I think have a really good chance to play in the major leagues in some way, shape, or form. So, but the health of the organization is relative to the minor league level is really good. Now, that being said, you and I both know that, you know, these guys are talented. They have good opportunity to develop and to play every day at the minor league level in an effort to get them ready to play at the major league level and be able to hand them off to Will Venable and his staff. But, you know, there's some rubber we got to put on the road before we're quite there yet, but we are excited. In particular, the lower levels, we're going to have a lot of guys up the middle in the middle of the field that we feel like, you know, from an ability perspective, have what they need to play at the major league level at some point down the road.
That's funny you mentioned the lower levels, because a lot of the focus is double A, high A. Who are you speaking of in the lower levels that you feel really good about?
Yeah, it's just, you know, that the draft class from last year, we've got a couple of young, you know, Latin guys, you know, Javier Mogollon, the Jeral Perez, the Albertus, you know, I'm still excited about Ryan Burroughs. William Bergola is, you could argue is one of our best infield defenders in the system. There's just some guys that are in the middle of the field. Obviously, Braden Montgomery is, you know, everybody knows relative to the trade, you know, we're going to run him out in center field a little bit in addition to right field, which is kind of his natural position. But yeah, in particular defensively, you know, a lot of those guys have some offensive ability, but some guys that you feel comfortable are going to be able to stay in the middle of the field defensively, which, you know, again, we've got some rubber to put on the road, but we do feel good about where those guys are at currently.
There you go. Paul Janisch from the White Sox podcast. That was Chuck Garfine. You heard him with the follow-up question there. One more thing I did want to play for you, because I know that White Sox fans, some are skeptical out there. They're thinking, listen, I just watched the White Sox try and execute a rebuild, and it didn't go as Sox fans and the Sox organization had hoped. So Chuck Garfine asked Paul Janisch, why will this rebuild be different?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think at the minor league level, we're just continuing to embrace, you know, I use the terminology like doing winning things, right? Like, it doesn't necessarily mean the scoreboard at the minor league level. Like, there's a lot of ways you can win the day, and players can, you know, whether it's, you know, routine, becoming a professional. If we're talking about, you know, a young Latin guy that's coming over to the States for the first time, you know, a college draft pick, there's going to be, you know, different scale that we, you know, adapting to just the pro level in general and playing every single day, and, you know, what that takes on the toll it takes on your body, et cetera. But just continuing to embrace, you know, doing things that help the organization get better. Like I said, winning things relative to, you know, just the day that you're going about your business, right? Like that translated last year, fortunately, into, you know, a couple of our teams within the organization having some success, obviously Birmingham, you know, winning the championship. But ultimately, like, doing the best we can to breed competition. You know, we have, like, kind of the prerequisite, you know, acquisition of talent, thanks to, you know, what Chris in the front office has done over the, you know, last 12 to 18 months and deepening the pool, like we referenced. But again, just trying to embrace, you know, look, it's a hard game, and it's, you know, getting to the big leagues is hard. We're not trying to sugarcoat anything. We need guys that are going to show up and be reliable every single day. And on our side, it is hard to get through the minor leagues. And, you know, we need the guys that are, you know, up for the challenge and that can, you know, number one, have the ability to do it, also stay healthy and have the right frame of mind to get to the next level and perform.
White Sox farm director Paul Janisch on the White Sox Talk podcast with Chuck Garfine earlier this week. I am Jeff Miller. This is White Sox Weekly. Up next, I had a conversation with Jesse Rogers along with Tom Waddle earlier this week, right before he was heading out to Arizona to take in spring training. Some good stuff on the White Sox. I'll let you eavesdrop on what he said about this upcoming season coming up next.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here in your home of the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000. I am Jeff Meller, your host today. Earlier this week, I was hosting with Tom Waddle, and we had Jesse Rogers swing by just before he heads out to Arizona, ESPN Major League Baseball insider Jesse Rogers. I'm sure you know who he is, but just in case you don't, I should give you his title. But yeah, Jesse covers all of baseball for ESPN, and he was getting set to leave for Arizona. And I'm sure he's already out there as I speak right now. But right before he did leave, he hopped on with Waddle and me. And it was a good conversation about the White Sox and this upcoming season. And this is how Tom Waddle set us up with Jesse Rogers.
So what are your expectations for this White Sox team?
I you know, they've 7 prospects in the top 100. That's good. Very pitching heavy prospect wise. I'm very interested to see that. But you were the one that brought it up at the end of last year. Like, is 120 it, or could it be worse next year?
Yeah, I mean, because everyone wants to think that automatically everything's going to go better. Your starting rotation's much less accomplished this year than last year.
Luis Robert will be traded.
Yeah.
If Benintendi and Vaughn have anything like good first halves, they'll be traded. So in some ways, they have not hit rock bottom. Rock bottom is when you've unloaded everybody.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
How can you say they have not hit rock bottom and they're coming off of a historically bad season? You're right.
The one thing I'll push back, though, on at the major league level, you may be right. The wins and losses, I can see a path where things, because what Wild just said, Crochet's been traded, right? He was the ace last year, the unexpected ace. They don't have Eric Fetty. You know, those were the two guys who are fronting the rotation for, and doing it well, for a bad team. So you could see why they might struggle to find the pitching. But your point about the prospects, I don't feel like it's rock bottom, because at the very least, you can see a glimmer of hope. You see the light at the end of the tunnel with these top prospects in the minor league system. Now, listen, they're not going to be, a lot of them won't be here this year, but last year, they didn't even have that.
Well, you may have rock bottom in terms of where you're at. You may have optimism that the future is brighter than it has been because you have these assets, but these assets aren't going to pay dividends for a while.
No, what's interesting is you could have last year was a bad first half and a really bad second half because the Fetty and Crochet
could flip
everything, and they reduced the inning. It could flip because your top prospects might make it here in the second half. And, you get a jolt, and they are talented. Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz and Colson Montgomery, there's talent there. But the first half could be really shaky. So, but as hard as it is to win 120, it's that hard to lose 120 and to do it a second year in a row. I do like the coaching staff, and that was the thing we didn't like last year. So a 14-game losing streak last year might be more like 2-12, and that's just enough to lose 110, 112 instead of 120. That's the way I look at it.
No, you're right. I mean, I think if you're a White Sox fan, as difficult as it may be, there is a glimmer. It'd be like the Bulls fans, you're going to see Bezelis.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the only draw here.
Yeah.
If you're a White Sox fan, especially in the second half of the season, there's a good chance you're going to get a look at what your future is.
Yeah. You'll bottom out when you sell off Luis Robert and a couple other guys, and then you start to bounce back because young prospects get their chance, and then they have to perform. Like, the first rebuild didn't work. Mm-hmm. Let's see if the second one does. But eventually in these rebuilds, you got to spend some money, and we haven't seen Jerry do that.
Yeah. We saw last week the rumor regarding Luis Robert come down, Waddle, Cincinnati Reds.
No, I was on that early in the offseason. It's the same old thing.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Getz is asking for 2023 return, meaning when Robert was great.
Okay.
And teams are saying, no, we're going to give you a 2024 return when he wasn't good. The Reds were there early, and nothing's advanced since then.
Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, listen, that makes sense, though. Like, if I'm Chris Getz, I'm also in the position where it doesn't serve him, I think, any real purpose to go ahead and just sell Luis Robert because he was injured last year and he didn't perform at the levels that he once did. But he's a talented player.
And he's not a free agent at the end of this year, so
you wait until the trade deadline.
You're not losing a ton of value. You're gaining value.
If you have to, worst case scenario, it's really hard to imagine he would perform worse than he did last year.
No, and let's say he has one of those great first halves. You really could cash in. Like, someone else is two top. They're asking for two top prospects.
Why can't he be part of your future? He's still young.
That was the same question with Crochet, right? I mean,
for what reason? I mean, he's a cost controlled player.
I think they just want to infuse as much young talent as possible so it lines up. Like,
you know better than anybody, Jess. You get all of these guys. I got 10 of them. How many of them truly hit?
No,
how many of them will ever be the player that Robert was? Maybe just in a moderate, stretch of time.
It's a risk. I mean, the other aspect I always say is if 10% of prospects make it, you want 100 prospects, not 10.
Yes,
you mean just want to gather as much. Crochet and Robert. They didn't do it. They're choosing this other path.
I would also ask you, how good are they at developing talent? Because not only identifying talent is an important skill, but developing these guys is also.
My only answer to that is it's a whole new crew there, and on paper, it looks good. People from Arizona, where they develop talent. Josh Barfield's from there. Will Venable has been around teams from Boston to Texas that have developed and won. The coaching staff is better than it's been in years. You got to give them a chance. The pitching infrastructure is good. You got to give them a chance.
Yeah.
But it's all risk. It's all risk.
Jesse Rogers joining Waddle and Meller here on ESPN 1000. You mentioned the coaching staff, Will Venable. What do you know about him? Because, you know, I know that he was somebody who a lot of people around baseball thought would be a really good manager once he got the opportunity.
Just he's had such a good apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. Such a good one. Bruce Bochy and the Rangers most recently. The Red Sox with Cora there. Before that, with the Cubs, when Theo and Madden were going well. I mean, he's been around. Mm-hmm. You know, Pedro was pretty much, you know, Kansas City when they weren't doing so well. They had a couple years there. Seattle before that, like, he's just really smart, really bright. I was around him a lot with the Cubs. So I don't know if that means I'm biased for him, whatever. But I just don't see – he checks more boxes than Pedro certainly did in any first-time manager that I can remember, to be honest. So we'll see. He's got to lead men, though. Like we talk about the Bears.
Yes.
Now he's got to lead, not as a bench coach, but as the manager.
So there you go. Some very encouraging words on new White Sox manager Will Venable from ESPN insider Jesse Rogers right there. And, again, that is one of the reasons why I am excited about this rebuild by the White Sox. I think Will Venable being in charge is going to be a true difference maker. And so that has me encouraged and excited right now about this White Sox organization. I am Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. Some of the latest Major League Baseball transactions to catch you up on, some former White Sox involved. Yoan Moncada has signed with the Angels. Tommy Pham, White Sox fans got familiar with him last season before he was traded. He signed with the Pirates. I mentioned earlier in the show, but the Mets did finally get that deal done with Pete Alonso, a 2-year, $54 million deal. Somewhat lower than I think Pete Alonso expected, but the market just never materialized for him there. The Tigers, they re-added Jack Flaherty. They traded him, remember, at the deadline. That kind of spurred them on their winning streak to actually end up making the playoffs. Jack Flaherty, of course, won a World Series ring with the Dodgers in the playoffs, but he ultimately re-signs in Detroit. And then the Cubs signed Nicky Lopez to a minor league deal. And then the Cubs also acquired Ryan Brazier in a trade with the Dodgers. Believe it or not, the Dodgers did not have room for Ryan Brazier, the 36-year-old reliever, on their 40-man roster because they're just so damn loaded. Kind of incredible, to say the least. I am Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow at White Sox on social today. I am Jeff Meller. Now, last Saturday night, after we had put the White Sox Weekly show to bed, I was actually lying in bed late in the evening, getting ready to close my eyes, scrolling through X. Probably not very healthy to be doing that, but I was late Saturday night, and what came across? One of the most shocking trades in sports history. Of course, I'm talking about Luka Doncic being dealt by the Mavericks to the Los Angeles Lakers. And boy, that sent the sports world into a tizzy for about three straight days. And it got me thinking, what are some of the most shocking trades in baseball history? Well, I'll share some of those with you coming up next right here on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports is the home of the Chicago White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
I know every Chicagoan, when I hear this song, can't help but think of Devin Hester dancing in the end zone waiting to return a kick. The Hall of Famer Devin Hester. Hall of Famers actually for professional football were unveiled on Thursday night at the NFL Honors. But Devin Hester, of course, Chicagoans know, went in last year absolutely justifiably so. Whenever I hear Soldier Boy, I cannot help but think of Devin Hester in the back of the end zone at Soldier Field. I am Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly, not Bears Weekly. This is White Sox Weekly. Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 with a White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to top matchups and the best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. All right, let's continue the cross sports convo because we're going to talk about some of the biggest trades in Major League Baseball history, or perhaps I should rephrase and say the most shocking trades in Major League Baseball history. And the reason I phrase it that way is because last Saturday, as I was getting set to go to bed, I had my television on. I had some basketball game on. I don't remember which one was actually being played at the moment because I wasn't paying close attention. I was actually paying much closer attention to my second screen, or I guess I should say my primary screen, which was my phone. I'm sure plenty of people out there listening are familiar with that habit, that unhealthy habit. Nevertheless, I was scrolling through some social media sites, and I was on X at that particular moment when I saw Shams Charania drop the bomb that shook the sports world. I'm talking, of course, about the Luka Doncic trade from the Dallas Mavericks to the Los Angeles Lakers for Anthony Davis and plenty of other pieces. And I couldn't help but I was surprised, but maybe not as surprised as everybody else. It didn't stun me the way the instant reaction from everybody else, to the point where it stunned everybody so much that Charania had to actually retweet his own tweet and say, "I have not been hacked. No. This trade did indeed actually happen." And so I was like, "Well, listen, we're doing a baseball show here on White Sox Weekly each and every week. And there's been some pretty shocking trades, specifically during the offseason. What a perfect time to run through some of the most shocking trades in Major League Baseball history." And so I'll bring you back to December 6th, 2023. And I'm going to go in reverse chronological order here for some of the most shocking trades in baseball history. So back on December 6th, 2023, you'll remember this one. The Padres trade Juan Soto and Trent Grisham to the New York Yankees last year for Michael King, Drew Thorpe, who we know here well in Chicago, Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez, and Kyle Higashioka. So that one obviously was a blockbuster. The Yankees needed to add that big bat that they were sorely missing. And ultimately, it was a good deal for both sides. Now, the Yankees ultimately did not win the World Series last year because they did run into the Dodgers. But, you know, they certainly don't go that deep. I think anybody would tell you they don't go to the World Series last year without Juan Soto, even though he ends up signing with the Mets this offseason. I think it was a deal the Yankees made. And when you get an appearance to the World Series, you can't hate it, right? But Michael King clearly had a great season for the Padres last year. Now there's rumors that the Padres are actually listening to offers on both Michael King and Dylan Cease. We'll see if either of those end up being moved this offseason. And, of course, here in Chicago, the Padres ended up sending Drew Thorpe to the White Sox in that deal for Dylan Cease. So we shall see what ends up happening with Dylan Cease and Michael King here going forward. But that certainly was a shocker. How about February 1st, 2021, the Rockies trade Nolan Arenado to the Cardinals for Austin Gomber, Elijeris Montero, Tony Losi, Mateo Gil, and Jake Summers. Of course, Austin Gomber and Elijeris Montero, probably the only real names that hardcore baseball fans are familiar with. Neither are superstar players by any means. Arenado was a superstar player. He was still a superstar when the Rockies ended up moving him, but the contract that they had given Nolan Arenado had kind of boxed them in, and they wanted some financial flexibility, so they were open to trading him, to the point where they actually ended up eating a good chunk of Nolan Arenado's contract. And the last couple of seasons for the Cardinals were pretty good for Arenado, but now it sounds like the Cardinals actually could be shopping Nolan Arenado yet again. We'll see if anything materializes, but Nolan Arenado does have a no-trade clause, so he does hold a lot of the power in this one. How about in that same offseason, January 7th, 2021, the Cleveland Guardians traded Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco to the Mets for Amad Rosario, Andrés Giménez, Josh Wolf, and Isaiah Green. Of course, Lindor would then go on to sign that 10-year, $341 million extension on the eve of opening day for the Mets. And the Mets had a pretty good playoff run of their own last year. And Francisco Lindor had a large hand in what they were able to accomplish last season. December 28th, 2020, the Cubs trade Yu Darvish and Victor Caratini to the Padres. The Padres, you sensing the theme here? For Owen Casey, Ismael Mania, Reginald Precedo, Jason Santana, and Zach Davies. Of course, that was the Cubs offloading Yu Darvish's salary. And ultimately, I think the Padres have been very happy with their Yu Darvish experience for the most part. And Victor Caratini actually has been a serviceable catcher for the Padres. And Owen Casey is one of the top prospects, one of the top hitting prospects for the Cubs. December 27th, 2020, so actually one day prior to the Yu Darvish deal, the Tampa Bay Rays traded Blake Snell to the Padres for Luis Patino, Cole Wilcox, Blake Hunt, and Francisco Mejia. Now, a lot of those players really didn't do much for the Rays, and they really haven't hit the majors at this point. But Blake Snell certainly was very productive for the Padres, ended up winning a Cy Young, and he now finds himself, Blake Snell does, in L.A., with that Dodgers, that vaunted Dodgers lineup, that all-star cast that they've assembled. Speaking of the Dodgers, they're on this list as well, making a huge addition. Remember back on February 10th, 2020, when they added Mookie Betts, David Price, and Cash from the Boston Red Sox in exchange for Alex Verdugo, Jeter Downs, and Connor Wong. The Twins ended up trading Brewster Graterol, a minor league prospect, and the 67th pick to the Dodgers for Kenta Maeda as well. I can't remember if it was if they both came together or if it was a part of a three-team deal to get that one over the goal line, but obviously that was a blockbuster when Mookie Betts was moved from the Red Sox to the Dodgers. All right, now going back some time. Let's go back about 10 years, a decade almost. December 9th, 2015, the Diamondbacks traded Dansby Swanson to the Braves in exchange for Shelby Miller. A couple of other minor leaguers were involved in that deal, but obviously Dansby Swanson was the headliner. He was a prospect at the time. Shelby Miller was an all-star with the Braves in 2015 when he was dealt as a 24-year-old. He had a 3.02 ERA coming off of 33 starts back when 33 starts was kind of the norm. We don't really see that these days. But Miller was moved in exchange for Dansby Swanson. And, you know, that maybe is a cautionary tale when you're trading for pitchers. Shelby Miller was a 24-year-old flamethrower who the D-backs wanted and were happy to add. And they ultimately end up giving up Dansby Swanson, who was one of the best hitting prospects in their system. And I would say, ultimately, the Diamondbacks ended up regretting that quite a bit, because Swanson ended up having a very productive career before he ended up signing with the Cubs. And Shelby Miller, of course, had a slew of arm injuries, never really was able to replicate what he was able to do in Atlanta. So always the cautionary tale when you're adding some pitching arms in exchange for a hitter. How about November 19th, 2012, the Marlins trade a familiar name, Mark Burley, along with Jose Reyes, Josh Johnson, Emilio Bonifacio, and John Buck to the Blue Jays for eight players. And you know it's something when the eight players are not even mentioned in the line here that I'm reading. But, of course, the thing here was that the Marlins had the previous season just gone on a spending spree to bring in Burley and Jose Reyes. They had given Giancarlo Stanton that huge contract extension that eventually became an albatross. They also added Heath Bell in that offseason. And once that helped the Marlins end up getting a stadium deal done in Dade County in Mount Miami, they then the next year offloaded Burley and Jose Reyes to the Toronto Blue Jays. We actually heard from Mark Burley back a couple of weeks ago on White Sox Weekly after he joined Carmen and Yurko, and Mark Burley talked fondly about his time in Toronto. I did not hear Mark Burley speak a word of his time in Miami with the guys, so that is interesting. Don't forget the White Sox unveiling the Mark Burley statue later this year on July 11th at Guaranteed Rate Field, so make sure you're at the park for that one. I think that's going to be a spectacular extravaganza at Rate Field later this season on July 11th. So make your plans today. Back on February 16th, 2004, this one might be the biggest baseball trade of all time. Alex Rodriguez dealt from the Yankees, I'm sorry, dealt from the Rangers to the Yankees in exchange for Alfonso Soriano. And anybody who was, if you're old enough to remember, if you were following baseball at that time, Alex Rodriguez had been rumored to be being traded to the Boston Red Sox for probably 3 weeks at that point. But in order to get that deal done, the Red Sox were trying to restructure his contract. And they were actually ultimately going to be trading away Manny Ramirez and Nomar Garcia-Parra. And they were going to be adding Alex Rodriguez. And actually, the White Sox were going to be sending Maglio Ordóñez to the Red Sox as well. The White Sox were going to be landing Nomar in that deal, in that three-team trade that was being talked about. Ultimately, the Major League Baseball PA would not sign off on the restructuring of Alex Rodriguez's contract, which at that time was worth $252 million, and it had $179 million remaining. And when the Red Sox put together the offer to try and get it restructured, the deferred money and everything, the MLBPA said it wasn't the same deal, so they weren't going to sign off on it, which is interesting, a far cry from what we see from teams like the Dodgers do these days with the deferred payments to Shohei Ohtani. So interesting that back in 2004, that actually held up the trade of Alex Rodriguez going to the Red Sox. And then, sure enough, the Yankees would swoop in and add Alex Rodriguez in exchange for Alfonso Soriano. And if you'll recall, that then resulted in one of the most epic plays in ALCS history, because Alex Rodriguez playing for the Yankees the next season in the 2004 ALCS would actually swat at Bronson Arroyo as he was running down the first baseline, would knock the ball out of Bronson Arroyo's glove, and he initially was called safe, but then umpires conferred, and led by Joe West would actually call Alex Rodriguez out for interference. And that was actually one of those critical plays that ended up resulting in the Red Sox epic comeback after being down 3-0 in the 2004 ALCS. And it all started that winter when Alex Rodriguez was not traded to the Red Sox, but ultimately the Yankees. How about 1999? The Blue Jays trade Roger Clemens to the Yankees for David Wells, Homer Bush, and Graham Lloyd. Clemens actually won two Cy Youngs in his 2 years in Toronto, and sure enough, the Blue Jays then offloaded him to the Yankees, where he would go on to win a couple of World Series with them. Going back a little bit later, how about this one? 1984, the Expos trade Gary Carter to the Mets for Hubie Brooks, Mike Fitzgerald, Herm Winningham, and Floyd Yeomans. Carter, of course, was an institution in Canada. The kid, he was Montreal's most popular player, won three gold gloves behind the plate for the Montreal Expos, seven-time All-Star, was just one of those classic 80s baseball players who really was the face of a franchise for a long time. So there you go, some of the most shocking trades in Major League Baseball history on the heels of a shocker that took place in the NBA last Saturday night when the Dallas Mavericks moved Luka Doncic to the Los Angeles Lakers. I am Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. Coming up next, as we close things out here, a beloved White Sox player who was the, I will go ahead and make the argument, for a brief moment in time was actually the face of baseball. Well, he delivered a huge moment for the White Sox during their last rebuild. In fact, I will tell you my favorite moment of the last White Sox rebuild was authored by this man, and he actually spoke recently about a huge moment that occurred a couple of seasons ago with the White Sox. I'll share that with you next right here on ESPN 1000.
White Sox Weekly with Connor McKnight
on the home of the White Sox,
ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's Home for Sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Short lead by Sebi. The pitch is hit in the air. Deep to right. That ball is gone. White Sox win. The Field of Dreams. 9-8 the final.
Light it up.
Can you believe it?
It was meant to be. First game ever in Iowa.
That's the best game ever played in Iowa.
Still get chills listening to that call by Len Casper and Darren Jackson right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. That was, of course, August 12th, 2021, the first, the inaugural game, the Field of Dreams game. Of course, they would do it yet again the following season, but it wasn't quite as good. I mean, and when I think back on that moment, Tim Anderson hitting that walk-off home run, that's one of those moments where I say the next, that right after that Tim Anderson home run, and then for the next, you know, few weeks, I truly believe that the White Sox were, at that moment, the it team in all of baseball. And for me, that was the height of where, for the White Sox rebuild, where they got back in 2021. To have that moment against the Yankees on that stage when all of baseball was locked in and watching Tim Anderson do what he did there. It was, like I said, it still gives me chills listening to Len and DJ's call of that moment in Iowa. It was absolutely beautiful for Sox fans, and the emotion pouring out of Tim Anderson as he rounded the bases in Iowa was so cool. And of course, you know, a few short years later, things completely were derailed. And of course, I think if you look back, the fight against the Guardians when Jose Ramirez caught Tim Anderson with the left, it was and dropped Tim Anderson. That was kind of, I think, for me, what kind of closed the books on the White Sox rebuild at that moment. But it was fun to see the White Sox reach that height, because there's lots of rebuilds that I know they didn't go on to win a World Series, but there's lots of rebuilds that don't actually get to the heights that the White Sox did in that moment. And so that's what I will always remember. That's how I will always remember that team. But Tim Anderson joined A.J. Pierzynski on Foul Territory and actually talked about, or answered the question from A.J. about being actually punched on television.
You and I are in a particular club together. Do you know what club that is?
No, what club is that?
We both got freaking punched in the face on national TV. Okay?
Yeah.
For all sure. Right? So we've both been through it. All right? And I've never heard you talk about it, and you don't have to talk about it. I've talked about when it happened with me openly, right? I've signed a million pictures of me getting punched, and people still bring it to me all the time, and I laugh about it, whatever. But did that have anything to do with anything that happened? Because, you know, you can go one of two ways. It can take you down a bad psyche, or it can take you to a good psyche. Like me, I laughed about it and moved on. I don't know, because I've never really heard you talk about it. Like, did it affect you in any way?
It's not really. I wouldn't even say it's really a whole lot to talk about it. I mean, I wouldn't say I wouldn't go as far as signing pictures. You know,
I understand.
But you know, I was going through shit for that moment. You know, that was probably, you know, created, you know, you know, the energy and the vibes to be able to, you know, get it, tap into that energy. But, you know, man, moments happen. You know, moments happen, and that's something that we got to live with, and I understand that. But, you know, I'm always looking forward. You know, I can't really change what happened. Okay. But I understood a lot of things in that moment throughout that situation, and I understand what love was. I understand, you know, who really is your teammate, who really got your back, who really in your corner. So I could say I understand those in that moment for sure.
Thought it was worth playing Tim Anderson there responding to that question from A.J. Pierzynski. Finally, sounds like he's got some closure on the situation. Of course, he has signed with the Los Angeles Angels along with a minor league deal, along with, as I mentioned, Yoan Moncada. So you'll have the shortstop and third base combo of those White Sox teams playing for the Angels this season. Hey, Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. All right, that's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. Want to say thanks to our executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley. I am Jeff Meller. This week, next time, we will have pitchers and catchers throwing baseballs. Thanks for listening, folks, on your home of the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000.